Welcome to the Shir Ben Ezra, Pashas Kisavo. I wanted to start off the evening speaking about some of the comments of the Ben Ezra on the Pashas Bikurim, with the description of the laws relating to bringing the first fruits to Yerushalayim. There are a few smaller comments that Ibn Ezra has, and then we'll get to one major point of contention between the Ibn Ezra and certainly other commentators, arguably all of Chazal, which we'll have to talk about a little bit. So the parashas we know opens up describing the mitzvah of Bikurim when the Jewish people come into Eretz Yisrael. So a farmer who sees one of the Shivat Haminim, one of the seven different types of species, begin to produce fruit during the late spring, summer season, is supposed to take something of the first fruit and bring it up to Yerushalayim. And the Pasuk says, Terechavav Pasuk Gimel, Uvashal HaKohen Asher Yiyah Vayomim Ahem, you should come to the Kohen who is serving in those days, V'yomaito Eilov, you should say to him, He got to see Hayom Hashem Elokecha. I have stated today to Hashem your God, Kivasi Elohars Hashem Yishma Hashem Elohim Elohim Elohim, that I've come into the land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has promised to our forefathers to give to us. What's this lesson of he got to see? I have stated. So the Ibn Ezra gives two interpretations of the word he got it, and I think there's a lot to talk about with regard to these interpretations. So first, I said Ibn Ezra, he got it, hatam, that is to say, kidei sheyishmu haktanim. I'm stating something in order that the children, the younger generation, should be able to hear it. Ibn Ezra presumably is reacting to the use of the word he got it, I have stated, which is a somewhat unusual verb for the Torah to use. Usually the Torah speaks about omarti, I have said. He got it is a somewhat more unusual word. So says to Ibn Ezra, one interpretation of he got it is that I have stated in such a fashion so that the children can hear and understand what I'm saying. So let's get to that in just a moment, right? So first of all, what children? What children? I mean, the farmer shows up, he brings his bikurim, right? So the answer, without telling us, is assuming that the farmer doesn't just show up in Yerushalayim by himself. More often than not, the farmer would make this into a family activity, which when you read through the Mishnayos and Bikurim that describe how it is just, it wasn't just like the farmer packed some Bikurim in a basket and, schlepped up to Yerushalayim. The Mishnayos and Bikurim describe how there was a whole parade, that they bring up the Bikurim to Yerushalayim amidst great fanfare with flute playing and there'd be an ox, walking in the front like a mascot, to lead the parade. It was a whole to-do. It was a whole, it was a whole exciting thing to go up to Yerushalayim with the Bikurim. So if it ever seems to be assuming such an exciting parade, the summer you brought the kids. What else are you going to do with the kids, right? The summer you brought the kids up to Yerushalayim. So when the farmer gets up to the Beit HaMikdash and he recites what we refer to as the Mikra of Bikurim, the passage that accompanies the bringing of the Bikurim, where the farmer basically recounts how God took us down to Egypt, how we suffered in Egypt, and yet God took us out of Egypt and redeemed us and brought us out of Yisrael, the Beit HaMikdash, and all of that. He's not just making that declaration for the farmer. He has his 15 kids in tow, and he's making the declaration so that they should hear. In other words, this is to pass on to the next generation this emuna, this belief in how God took us out of Egypt and brought us to Eretz Yisrael. Now, as Shulchan pointed out before, the truth is, this gives us a whole interesting perspective on something which we do every year. We know that the core of the Pesach Haggadah are the psukim of Mikra Bikurim. In other words, what do we do on the night of Pesach? As the Mishnah Sotah tells us, we basically take these four psukim that were recited by the farmer. Again, we'll get to in a moment. Arami Al Bi'Alfi, Bayerit Al Bishayma, Bayogar Sham. We take those psukim, we recite them, and phrase by phrase, we expound upon them and use that as a vehicle to discuss Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's an old question, and we've spoken about it here in the Shul a number of times. Why is it that Chazal chose to make those four psukim the vehicle through which we would convey the story of Yeshayahu's Messiah to our children, why not just take the actual story as it appears at the beginning of Shmos? Okay, you want to excerpt it a little bit, cut it down, you know, kind of just take, you know, the best hits of the ten makos, and I guess by definition all the ten makos are hits, but I take the best hits of the ten makos and just present them in in a condensed format. Why take Sukkim from Dvarim as opposed to the actual story itself, which appears in the Chumash? Perhaps, based on this Ibn Ezra, we can suggest the following. The original Mikra Bikurim was intended to be a recounting of the story to the next generation. In other words, that's the original Hagadah. The original Hagadah is when the farmer brings the fruit, the Bikurim, to the Beis HaMikdash. He got it, the Ayom HaShem Elokecha. I'm recounting the story in the presence of my children. So that's what the four psukim of Mikra Bikurim are supposed to be. That's within the Torah itself. The Torah is giving us the blueprint, the formula for how to pass on the story to the next generation. And based on this, by the way, it's easy to understand why that book, which we read on the night of Pesach, is called the Haggadah. Why do we call it the Haggadah? Right, so perhaps based on the Ibn Ezra, based on this process, he got it the Ayom, Hashem Elokecha. What's that? Okay, I don't think it's incorrect to relate it to this pasuk either. The Maggid, by the way, asked the question: why is it based on the Yigadah to Levincha? Chazal always used the lashon Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Right, so why don't we call it the Sipur? In other words, so again, on the simplest of levels, yes, it's related back to the pasuk of Yigadah to Levincha, but I don't think it's wrong to say that it's also linked in with the pasuk. In other words, Yigadah to Levincha means give it over to the next generation. Ibn Ezra is linking that to Yigadah to Ayom HaShem Elokecha. This is also give it over to the next generation. It's the same Haggadah. Right? The term Haggadah, as per the Ibn Ezra, means not just telling the story, but passing on the story, using the story as a vehicle of Masorah to the next generation. And that you see in this interpretation of the pasuk here, where the original encapsulation of the story appears in the Chumash itself. Right? So that, again, in a few words, Ibn Ezra, I think, has given us tremendous insight into what it is that we do on the night of the Seder. Says the Ibn Ezra, but I'm not done. I have another shot in what Higadati means. One shot that Higadati means, I'm recounting a story in such a way so that the children will hear it. Hukidmus Hodaya. The word Higadati implies a certain degree of thanksgiving. Meaning, if the prophet just would have said, Amarti Hayom Hashem Elokecha, Amarti just means, I'm telling a story. Higadati lehagid, right, has an implication in Hebrew of telling, but also giving thanks. Right, the same in Tehillim. Lehagid baboker chazdecha, temunoscha baleilos. This Haggadah implies not just, giving over information, but thanking God for the fact that we were saved. Mikidmus Hodaya, Shashem Hishlin Shluoso. We're giving thanks to God for having fulfilled the promise that He made, the oath that He made, to take Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. Now, if we work with that interpretation, so that also gives us a tremendous amount of insight into the Haggadah on the night of Pesach, because the Haggadah is also not simply a story. Right? In other words, the Haggadah on the night of Pesach is not just a lesson in ancient Jewish history. An integral part of the Haggadah is Shevach, is giving praise and thanks to the Ribbono of Shel Olam for having redeemed us from Egypt. It's not accidental that the Maggid section of the Haggadah concludes with two chapters from Hallel. In other words, that's an integral part of the of the recitation of the Maggid. Rashi writes in Masech Tzachim that when Chazal make the drasha that Matzah is referred to as Lechem Oni, right? So Chazal say, what does it mean Lechem Oni? Lechem Sha'oni loves Dvarim Harbet, that the Matzah is supposed to have numerous things recited in its presence. So what are those Dvarim Harbet? What are those numerous things? Says Rashi, the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim and Hallel. Right? In other words, that you tell over the story and you praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Those are those two prakim at the end of Maggid are an essential part of the retelling of the story. We don't just tell the story academically. We give thanks to the Rebbe Shlomo for having brought us out of Egypt. So that's the lesson of Haggadah as well. And Haggadah means I'm teaching the next generation, and Haggadah means I'm giving thanks for that which transpired. So right here, in just in that interpretation of the word, you have the tremendous, tremendous application to the Haggadah Shel Pesach. Let's read a little bit further in the Ezra. So the pasuk in Hey, says the Onisa, the Amanta, Lifnei Hashem Elokecha, right? That literally you should answer and say before Hashem, Harami Oved Avi Vayered Mitzrayim Vayogar Shom, right? So the lashon of the Onisa, you should answer, is the rather puzzling one, right? Because after all, answering usually implies that somebody asked you a question first. Here, the farmer just shows up in Yerushalayim, in the Beit HaMikdash, the Onisa of Yomarka, and you should answer and say, answer what? Answer who? Right? Well, it's a question. You know, you think of an answer before you have a question. So comes the Ibn Ezra with a fascinating, again, short insight, right? Says the Ibn Ezra, Yitachem sheyishalu hakohanim leimor maze shehevesa. It's possible that when the farmer shows up, there's a question that the Kohanim actually asked the farmer, which is not in the Chumash. The Kohanim asked the farmer, what are these things that you've brought? Al-Kain ve-Onisa. And that's what the Torah implies by saying ve-Onisa. You should answer the Kohen and say, Arami Oveit Ofi. Now, let's take this Ibn Ezra a step further. Right? I don't get it. It's Bikurim season. The farmer shows up at the Beis HaMikdash with a basket. There are fruits in the basket. What is this? The Kohen's first day on the job? Gee, what is it that you brought? Let me take a guess. Pigeon Peter Hamar. No, it's Bikurim, right? So what kind of odd question is this, you know? And the Ibn Ezra seems to be assuming that the question is not just a nonchalant question. The question apparently is somewhat important and maybe even integral to what's supposed to be going on, to the point that the Torah has to reference the question. You don't need to be on that. You should respond and say. So the truth is, this may be the source or a source or another aspect of the mitzvah Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim on the 9th of Pesach. You know, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik famously pointed out that there are numerous unique aspects to Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim on the night of Pesach that are absent in the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, remembering the Exodus from Egypt, which we do every day, twice a day, whenever we say Kriya Shema. The third pasuk of Tzitzis, we say, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, so Tzitzis Tamei Eretz Mitzrayim. So we're remembering Egypt and the Exodus from Egypt on a daily basis. So what's special about the night of the Seder? So one of the things that Chaim Soloveitchik said is that the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim on the night of the Seder is supposed to be done in a question and answer format. So what's the source for that? So again, the more obvious source is that when the Torah speaks about the interaction between father and son, it typically casts that interaction in terms of a question and answer. When your son asks you, what's this all about, you'll answer him as follows. But here, there's an Ezra saying, even the pasuk of Arami Ovid Avi, the parasha of Nikra Bikurim, which again is the actual text of the Haggadah, that too is supposed to be recited in the context of a question and answer. The Onisa of the Omarita, right? So in other words, the Nikra Bikurim, the whole format of the Nikra Bikurim is supposed to be tied to the format which is utilized for Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim on the night of the Seder. It's also the Derech She'eilah U'Tshuva. It's also in the question and answer format and, you know, just reinforces the idea that Arami Ovid Ovi is utilized as the text, as the central text for the Haggadah Shel Pesach. Finally, let's start talking about the piece in the Ibn Ezra, which is, I think, the most controversial. So, good. So the farmer is asked by the Kohen, what you're bringing, what you have, which again, as we're interpreting it, is not just the Kohen's curiosity or the Kohen's ineptitude, you know, that he just started the job yesterday and nobody told him that it's Bikurim season, right? This is a part of the ritual. The Kohen Peshito is asking, what do you have? And the farmer answers. So what does he answer? Arami Oved Ovi Vayered Mitzrayimah Vayogar Shom Ben Shem Na'ot. What does the phrase Arami Oved Ovi mean? I'm not even going to translate it because that itself is part of the debate. Arami Oved Ovi. So writes Rashi, Lavan Bikesh La'akor Es Hako Kishirodav Achar Yaakov. The Arami, says Rashi, the Aramean is a reference to Lavan, who is from Aram, and Oved Ovi means sought to destroy my father. Lavan Bikesh La'akor Es Hako. Lavan sought to destroy my father Yaakov. Right? That's the way this pasuk is presented in the Haggadah Shel Pesach. Say Lamar, Mabikesh Lavan Harami Lakos Yaakov Avino. Go out and learn what Lavan the Aramean sought to do to our father Yaakov. Lavan Bikesh Lakos Hakol Shenema Arami Ovid Ovi. Right? Lavan wanted to destroy everything as it says Arami Ovid Ovi. So, parenthetically, what does it mean that he sought to destroy everything? So, Rashi actually Al Chumash speaks out what this means, even though there are many interpretations as to what it means that Lavan sought to destroy everything. When Lavan pursued after Yaakov, Lavan, when he catches up to Yaakov, says, you know, I could have killed you. I could have killed everyone in your camp, but God appeared to me in a dream last night. He said, don't touch Yaakov. But really, if it was up to me, had God not interceded, I would have killed you. I would have killed you. You know, and would have killed your whole family. You know, is still a little bit short, you know, of killed you and killed your family, right? You know, would have, it's not quite did. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu counted Lavan's thought to destroy Yaakov and his family as if he had actually carried out that action. That's what it means, Lavan. Lavan had a thought to destroy Yaakov and his entire family, and the Torah so blames Lavan for that thought that for all of the rest of history we always talk about how Arami Ovid Ovi, you know, Lavan the Aramean sought to kill my father, to destroy his family, and to wipe away the Jewish people. So Zot Rashi, they said the Gemara in Kiddushin, Shibu Umal Sa'olam Choshev Lama Kodesh Baruch Hu Mashal V'Kenaisa. Right, when it comes to the nations of the world, their thought to do something evil is counted like they actually did. Okay, that's exactly this Rashi. So the translation of Arami Oved Ovi is an Aramean sought to destroy my father. That's Rashi, that's the Sifro, that's the Haggadah Shel Pesach that we say every year. Come to Ibn Ezra, and he says, Oved Ovi, Milash Oved Mehapoalim She'enom Yotzin. The word Oved is a verb, but it's not a verb which, I think the term is causative, right? It's not a verb which implies what X is looking to do to Y. The Ilu Haya Arami Alavon Haya Akasov Omer Ma'avid Oma'abed. To destroy is a binyan hifil in Hebrew. So in other words, had the pasuk meant to say an Aramean tried to destroy my father, the proper Hebrew grammar would have been Arami Ma'avid Ovi. Arami Ma'abed Ovi. Right? So Oved literally means was lost, right? Was foundering, not that he was seeking to destroy. It's a verb of description, not a verb which describes how one person is trying to implement something against someone else. Furthermore, he says to Ibn Ezra, even if we accept that translation, Arami Ovid Avi means that an Aramean, Lavan, sought to destroy my father, there's no continuity between that idea and the rest of the sentence or the rest of the paragraph, for that matter. Arami Ovid Avi, Lavan sought to destroy my father. Then my father went down to Egypt. Lavan trying to kill Yaakov had nothing to do with Yaakov actually going down to Egypt. Yaakov only went down to Egypt years later, after he was forced to, basically, to reconcile with Yosef and to save his family from famine. And nothing to do with Lavan. Lavan was so out of the picture by then. So the phrase is destroyed it, according to that reading. Zakharov, it would seem to me as follows, says the Ibn Ezra. Sha'arami hu Yaakov. The Aramean in this case is Yaakov Avinu himself. Ki'ilu Omar HaKosuv Kasher Hoya Aviva Aram Hoya Ove. And what the pasuk means, Arami Ovei Ovi, means that when my forefather Yaakov was in Aram, when he was in the land of Lavan, he himself was Ovei. Yaakov was lost. What does it mean that Yaakov was lost? Zatam Oni Velo Mama. Lost can mean destitute. And Ibn Ezra quotes the pasuk, Snu Sheikha La Ovei, you know, give beer to the impoverished person. Right, so, you know, to be lost can mean to be destitute. So what Arami Ovid Ovi means, as Ibn Ezra was, means my father Yaakov, when he was in Aram, was destitute. So what's that got to do with anything? Right, same question that Ibn Ezra asked on the Rashi interpretation, Arami Ovid Ovi by Yerim Mitzrayim, no? Latam, ki lo yirashi yoretz ve'ovi? Ki oni hoyo kasher boil arom, gam ger hoyo b'mitzrayim. You should know, says the Ibn Ezra, again, this is spoken from the perspective of the farmer. The farmer shows up in the Beis HaMikdash carrying first fruits, and the farmer says, I'd like to declare, it's obvious that God gave me this land. It doesn't come to me through Yaakov, because Yaakov had no possessions, but he ran away to Aram, he had nothing. Arami Ovid Ovi, my, you know, in other words, it's the equivalent of saying, I came from nothing. My forefathers, they were destitute, they had nothing. My Yerim Mitzrayim, and then they went down to Egypt, and they certainly had no claim on Eretz Yisrael at that point. To the extent to which we have any claim to Eretz Yisrael whatsoever, it's only because God gave us the land. It's not that we got it through our own means. That's the meaning of Arami Ovi Ovi, says the Ibn Ezra. Okay? You hear the interpretation. But it seems to be clearly not the way Chazal understand the pasuk. The commentary of Eliyahu Mizrahi, one of the most famous commentaries on Rashi, brings the Ibn Ezra's interpretation of the pasuk. And he says, how can the Ibn Ezra possibly give this interpretation of the pasuk? Clearly, Chazal had a mesorah, they had a tradition, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu and Har Sinai, that the interpretation of Arami Ovid Ovi was, Lavan from Aram sought to destroy my father. That's clearly what Chazal, you know, the way they interpreted the pasuk in the Pesach HaGadol. And this isn't just one of those things where, you know, you can interpret the pasuk this way, you can interpret the pasuk that way. This is a part of the Torah Shabbat Torah. This is a part of the oral Torah itself. That the pasuk, that the phrase is referring to Lavan Ha'arami, and not to Yaakov Avinu. How can the Ibn Ezra give this interpretation? It's akin to interpreting a halakhic pasuk against the interpretation of Chazal, which the Ibn Ezra told us at the beginning of his introduction to Chumash. He's not going to do that. He's not going to mess with the interpretation of Halacha thought of by Chazal. Comes the commentary of the Machlokes Yehuda, one of the commentaries on the Ibn Ezra, and he says this question shouldn't bother us. It's clear that although Chazal and the Sifra interpreted Arami Ovid Ovi as referring to Lavan and not to Yaakov, it's clear that That's not the only way to understand the pasuk, and certainly one can't claim that there's some kind of Masara going to back to Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashina, that this is the only way to understand the pasuk. I'll prove it to you, says L'chalkikei Yehuda. Take a look at various other Mefarshim on the Chumash besides the Ibn Ezra, and they give interpretations that are either identical to or similar to the Ibn Ezra. So to take an example, the Sfarno on the pasuk writes, Arami Ovi, Yine Ovi, Shahayo Yaakov, Hayo's man ma Arami Ovi. My forefather Yaakov was a wandering Aramean, a lost Aramean. Shahayo Ovi Moshe. He didn't have a permanent home. So certainly Yaakov was unable on his own to really produce the kind of nation that later developed from Klal Yisrael. And that's what the pasuk means to say, Arami Ovi Ovi. And it was only later that the nation of Klal Yisrael grew to be as great as it actually was. Or consider the following interpretation from the Rashbam. The Rashbam was a contemporary of the Ibn Ezra. The Rashbam writes that the pasuk is not talking about Yaakov Avinu at all. Says the Rashbam, Avi Avraham Arami Hoya. Who's Avi? My father? Avraham. Right? Avraham actually came from Aram. He actually came from that area. So Arami Ovid Ovi, my forefather Avram, was a wandering Aramean. And, you know, the pasuk is underscoring that the Jewish people were homeless until God took them out of Mitzrayim and brought them to Eretz Yisrael. So says the Machlokes Yehuda, you certainly can't have complaints to the Ibn Ezra. There's so many other Mefarshim, he brings other examples as well, there's so many other Mefarshim who give alternate interpretations to Arami Ovid Ovi. You certainly can't say that it's some kind of Masorah, that this is the only way to interpret the pasuk. Aye, but in the end of the day, Chazal do make this drasha of Arami Ovid Ovi in the Haggadah. Wouldn't that seem to grant it a certain authenticity, a certain aspect that can't be challenged? So the Machlokes Yehuda suggests something interesting. He says that we know that Ibn Ezra himself acknowledges that there's pshat in this rash. There's a simple interpretation of the pasuk, and then there's a deeper, more homiletic interpretation of the pasuk. The Ibn Ezra acknowledges that what Chazal say, Arami Ovid Ovi, means lava sought to destroy my father, is the drash, is the deeper, homiletic interpretation of the pasuk. All the Ibn Ezra is saying is that the pshat, the simple interpretation of the pasuk, is that it's referring to Yaakov Avinu. It doesn't mean that Chazal's interpretation is off base or incorrect. It's just that there's just two different levels of interpretation. And the whole Haggadah is the derech flesh. That's what the Mishnah itself says. The Doresh Me'arami Ovid Ovi Ashikoma Kolapasha Kula. In other words, the whole interpretation of the whole paragraph of Arami Ovid Ovi is presented on the level of drash, and it's not meant to be the pshat. Chazal were not claiming that was the pshat, the simple interpretation of the pasuk. So those the pshat interpretation of the Ibn Ezra and the Sfarno and the Rashbam and so many others is not at odds with the interpretation of Chazal given the Sifra. There's just two different levels of Torah interpretation. And again, everyone involved would be the first one to say, Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, that every interpretation is part of the 70 faces that the Torah possesses. We'll pick up Ezra Shana Tavayim, just one or two other brief artists, and we'll continue then. Rechanan Rechasa Oner Rasa HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Zachos Et Yisrael L'Sikach Kirbo Lehem. Welcome to the second part of the Shir in the Ibn Ezra, Parshas Kisavo. We started off the Shir with the very beginning of Parshas Kisavo, a discussion about the Bikurim. I wanted to end off the Shir with a brief, but I think very powerful, Ibn Ezra from the very, very end of the Sedra. And it's a good lesson. It's a good lesson, not just for the Parsha, but for life. So the very end of the Sedra, Parak Choses, Pasuk Ches, Pasuk says, "Shmaaseh v'divrei avis hazos." You should guard the words of this covenant, V'asisem osam, you should carry them out. L'man tashkilu eis kol asher ta'asun. In order that tashkilu in everything that you perform. What's tashkilu? So that's the Ibn Ezra. K'mo tashlichu. The word tachila means that you should be successful. In other words, carry out the words of this covenant, carry out the words of Torah, in order that you be successful in everything that you do. And writes the Ibn Ezra, how do we know that the word tachila means that you should be successful? So he quotes the pasuk that many of us say every Motzei Shabbos is part of the Yitzer Lecha. Vayi David Lecha Durachov Maskil Vashem Imo. David HaMelech was maskil in all of his endeavors, and God was with him. So the way that pasuk is understood is that David was successful in all of his endeavors, and you know, God was with him. If God's with you, certainly good formula to being successful. So over there, the word tachilu or maskil is used in the word of being successful. Here too, tachilu means that you should be successful in everything that you're involved in. The targum, the uncle, is the way we have it translate similarly. The deal, the satzlechon, yaskol di sabadon, you should be successful in everything that you do. However, it's interesting to note that the targum Yerushalmi, another translation of the Torah into Aramaic, translates the word differently. There, the targum Yerushalmi writes, diglau de tisboninun, yaskol mal de sabadon. In order that you should contemplate everything that you are doing, not that you should be successful in everything that you're doing, but rather to ponder on, you should contemplate everything that you're doing. And the truth is, based on, you know, just the cursory knowledge of the Hebrew language, the Targum Yerushalmi that we just quoted seems to be a little more accurate, right? Because the word haskilu is related to the word seichel, which means intelligence. And translating that word as in order that you contemplate, you know, something that has to do with the mind, in order that you focus on or, you know, use your intelligence to, you know, to contemplate, would seem to be more in line with the word tachila. Where do we find that the word seichel is related to the word for success? Seichel means intelligence, right? But how do you have one word that means intelligence and success together? Right, so the Matei Lashon, one of the later commentaries, makes a comment over here, which I think is implicit in Ibn Ezra, but it's a beautiful idea to bring it out. Hatam ki haseichel husiba sahatzlocha. Right, where does your success come from? From intelligence and understanding. I mean, again, occasionally you have people who are successful, you know, despite themselves, you know, despite they kind of blunder into success. But that's the exception rather than the rule, and truth be told, you know, that kind of success, you know, that you won the Powerball is not usually all that long-lasting, you know. I mean, real success, success that stays with you, is generally linked to intelligence. The Dach HaKsuvim L'Kra Dover V'Shem Tzibosto and writes the Matei Lashon. And the Torah generally, you know, describes the phenomena based on its root. You know, so when the Torah says, in order that you be successful, the idea of being successful and contemplating and understanding and being intelligent, those are all concepts that are interlinked together. If you're not going to be, you know, contemplative and intelligent and, you know, cerebral, so you're not going to be successful in the end of the day. You can't just kind of throw yourself on the world and say, I don't know what I'm doing, but, you know, I'm hoping for the best. You know, that's not really a recipe for success.
The best thing, the best topic said was succeeded on the hero that it is sort of, does it recognize that that the soul was previously taught?
What's the connection?
No, I'm saying that, you know, it seems like a very wild statement to make after hearing almost like a
all the terrible things that will happen.
Very right.
Either that, or you can say success is not such a little thing. Being successful is a big deal. You know, being successful can counteract all of those terrible things that were mentioned in the Talmud. Well, I think, okay. So if we just stop here. So I think what we walk away from is try to be smart so you'll be successful. right? Which is okay, you know, maybe that's good business advice. It's also good ego building advice. You know, I'm successful because I'm smart. You know, that other guy is not so successful. He's not so smart. You know, I read Intelligence for Dummies. I mean, that's why I'm so smart. You know, so that's why I'm able to be successful in life. You know, the idiot guide to intelligence. Right? I read the book cover to cover. You know, so yeah, that's really that's it. That's what the Torah is teaching us: just be smart, and you'll be successful. So there's a beautiful comment that the Malbim has over here on this pasuk. And I think it fleshes out the idea from the Ibn Ezra a little bit more, and you know, just helps us understand it a little better. Haskalah yeshua shtei horaos. Right? The Malbim, the word Haskalah, which usually is translated intelligence, actually has two different meanings. Haskalah hasecha b'yonei hanefesh, the intelligence of that has to do with spiritual matters. In other words, a deep spiritual understanding, and days hashvachas hamaisa din yonei aguf, right? Material success. Says the Malbim, the two are really linked together. A deep intelligence in spiritual things is linked to success in material things. Now that's a little bit different from what we just presented a moment ago. In a very superficial understanding of the Ibn Ezra, the way we just presented a moment ago was that intelligence in material things leads to success in material things, right? If you're a smart businessman, you'll be successful. Maybe that's true, right? That leads to a certain sense of ego. But intelligence in spiritual things leads to success in material things is a very different kind of statement. Because true intelligence in spiritual matters is not about how smart I am. It's about how wise I am. And those are two very different things. When a person is contemplative and wise and reflects upon the real ultimate truths in life, that's called haskalah, what they will call that deep knowledge. What the Targum Yerushalmi calls tisbonenun, you know, you'll be contemplative. And if a contemplative life is the successful life, right? In other words, if you know, you'll be contemplative in spiritual things if you lead life in such a way so that you think about life. Not that you have tremendous business acumen. That's not what haskalah means in this context. If you reflect upon the purpose and meaning of life, haskilu, so then haskilu, you'll be successful in life because you will understand what life's purpose is all about. Truth be told, just to take this one step further, if a person really contemplates his purpose and meaning in life, he can achieve tremendous success even if, from a certain objective perspective, he has no material success whatsoever. Right? A person who, let's say, lives in a hovel and doesn't make a lot of money and has a lot of difficulties but has meaning and purpose in life, in many cases can be described as more successful and more happy than the person who may have a lot of material things but doesn't really understand why he's here. Right? Edu Ashias of Afrikaam. That's what Chazal said, right? Who's the person who's rich? The person who's happy with what he has. So that's really, you know, this double meaning of Haskalah, right? That self-awareness, understanding, intelligence, contemplativeness, right, is all related in Hebrew to the very same word for success. Is the tremendous hashkafa that the Torah is sharing with us. You know, the key to true success is a deep spiritual understanding of what our purpose and meaning is. When that and success are actually literally inseparable from one another. They are the same word in Hebrew. To be successful and to, you know, to have deep understanding, you know, is literally the same thing. From the perspective of Lashon HaKodesh, from the perspective of Hebrew. Wish everybody a wonderful Shabbos, and as a Hashem, we will pick up with the next Ibn Ezra, which the last Ibn Ezra of this year, we still have a few more parashiyos, but the last Ibn Ezra of this year, I will pick up as a Hashem next Wednesday night.